views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the hit show, The Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. We have the power. We have the resources. We have the knowledge. We have the intellect. We have the innovation, and we have the heart to create a world based on parity, practical innovation, and potential. This hit show with Claudette Rowley will take us on a journey so we can explore our planet, our global community, and our opportunity for transformation. We need a cultural revolution that allows us to look past political squabbles, lack of humanity, and to what she calls reality resistance. So tune in. This is the Brilliance Ultimatum. And time's up.
Hi, everybody. Hey, this is Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to the Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up, on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience what's going well in the world and the opportunity for transformation that's upon us. On the second and fourth Fridays of each month, we have some of the foremost change makers, action takers, and truth tellers helping you re-envision what's possible on our planet and in our world. I am really excited about today's guest, and I'm going to introduce her right now. She is Dr. Audrey Nelson, and she and I are going to be talking about managing unconscious bias. Wow, what an important topic. So let me tell you a little bit about Audrey. She is an internationally recognized trainer, keynote speaker, author, and consultant, and she helps organizations increase their productivity and profitability through great communication strategies. She holds a PhD in communication and conducted postdoctoral work in Oxford, England in gender communication. And she has a wealth of experience. For 30 years, she's trained and consulted for a wide variety of government and Fortune 50 companies in 49 states and four continents. Her client list is very lengthy, so I'll just share a few companies with you. PricewaterhouseCoopers, AT&T, Honeywell, Hewlett-Packard, IBM, Lockheed Martin, Johnson & Johnson, the U.S. Marine Corps, and there are many, many others. Dr. Nelson is also the co-founder and served as president of the Organization for Research on Women and Communication, and she is the gender communication blogger for Psychology Today. And finally, she's a published author. A couple of her books are You Don't Say, Navigating Nonverbal Communication Between the Sexes, and most recently, The Gender Communication Handbook, Conquering Conversational Collisions Between Men and Women. Welcome, Audrey.
Thank you, Claudette. I'm excited to participate in this program.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. I've been looking forward to this. So, and this topic, you know, bias, managing unconscious bias, I think is so timely and important right now. It always has been, but it seems like it's even more important. What has been your, you know, you're an expert in this field. What has been your sense of things? Is the urgency around this increasing?
Well, I believe it has. You know, all, I was just sharing this with someone today, how there are trends, and trends in social science, trends in training, which often go hand in hand. And I mean, unconscious bias has always been around. But if we're talking right now, what's happening in the last couple of years, particularly with the hashtag MeToo, you know, 5 years ago with Sheryl Sandberg's release of Lean In, we have come, now those are both, you know, gender and women examples, but of course we know that there is bias in race as well and other areas. But right now it's pretty hot again because we've had a lot of things going on that have received national and international attention. So I think it's a fascinating area. And I should also say there isn't a person, myself included, who is listening to this talk show that doesn't have some kind of bias. But of course, who's going to happily raise their hand and mm-hmm. say, I'm a misogynist, I'm a racist? We all have biases. And I can use myself as an example. I have a couple of great stories, but I want to begin by this. So if we can all embrace and accept that we do indeed have it, you know, where does this come from? Where do we get it? It has a lot to do with how you were raised, your background, your personal experiences, societal expectations. For example, what are our expectations of what it means to be a man, of what it means to be a woman, our expectations of how they should behave, and sexual stereotypes, cultural context, all of it can influence, you know, our decisions and our actions without us even realizing it. So, you know, implicit or unconscious bias happens when we make decisions in a nanosecond, which unfortunately many of us speak before we talk or we react instantly. And, you know, one of the books that I want to recommend, I have several recommendations. If you want to get a sense of how this process happens in lightning speed, you want to get a hold of Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink. And that is such an appropriate title. And incidentally, he's one of my favorite authors. All his books have made the New York Times bestselling list. So once you read one, you will probably go on to others. But Blink is the one I like. It's such an appropriate title because these decisions, our behavior, our actions, whether we raise our hand to vote pro or con on something, they often can happen in the blink of an eye, in a nanosecond. So that is the part to me that's fascinating. And the question becomes is, how do we harness this? And is anybody in the work world and outside the work world exempt, you know, from having these faux pas, saying things that will be revealing of our bias, but that we wish we had never said
right.
or done. And so for me, the issue becomes more of what do we do with it once it happens? How do we handle it? You know, we know how this can impact the workplace. And this is why you've been hearing a little more about it lately. It impairs diversity and retention rates. It can promote a real disconnected culture. It can undermine recruiting efforts and employee development. So all of these variables serve to destabilize an organization. Yeah.
I'm just curious, when you're working with a company and they say, or an individual, and they say to you, how do you define bias? What is your answer? How do you define it?
Well, bias to me, and you know, everybody has different definitions. Every author has a perspective. We all discriminate. I discriminate all the time. I much prefer a flaky croissant to a gut bomb scone. I can't stand scones. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what people's attraction are to those things. So there I'm discriminating. We all have biases. They're unconscious biases. They're social stereotypes. They can be about a certain group of people. individuals from outside our conscious awareness. It can be more prevalent. It is more prevalent than we realize. And basically, you are never going to have a sanitized workplace free of unconscious bias. So bias, for me, is really a discrimination, a preference, a selection or choice belief system that something may be more superior and or inferior. So that is my definition of bias.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it's really important to hear. And as you mentioned, you know, of course, there are some people have some different perspectives on it. But
right.
But really, this idea that we all discriminate, that we all, whether it's about homes, right, or whatever. It's
yes. And nobody wants to admit it.
Right.
You know, as I said, as we began, who's got, okay, everybody who has a bias in here, raise your hand. Well, no one's going to do that. No one wants to admit to it. But what the research demonstrates is that there's bias across nearly every field and for nearly every group of people. And I'd like to give a couple of examples. If you're a Latino, we know you'll get less pain medication than if you were a white patient. So there's an example from the medical field. If you're an elderly woman, you'll receive, this is frightening, fewer life-saving interventions than an elderly man.
Wow.
If you're a man being evaluated for a job as a lab manager, you'll be given more mentorship. You'll be judged as more capable, and you'll be offered a higher starting salary than if you were a woman. Let's go to the classroom. If you're an obese child, your teacher is more likely to assume you're less intelligent than if you were slim. If you're a Black student, you are likely, and there's a lot of data, and this is very controversial, and I resonate with this because both my daughter and son-in-law are high school teachers. If you're a Black student, you are more likely to be punished than a white student behaving the same way. You know, we know, for example, they're sent to the principal's office more often. They get suspensions more often. So it becomes tricky. And one of the things, you know, when I work with my clients and they say, oh, we want to make the environment more female friendly. In one of my cases, it was a tech company, which was a joint project with Lucent Technologies. And I collect data from a variety of sources, focus groups, face-to-face interviews, anonymous surveys, which are always rich. And I put all the data together. But I always tell my client, you know, I'm not the thought police. You cannot get inside people's heads and monitor their thoughts, but you can focus on what the actions are. How do they vote on issues? What's the composition of the board? Do we have 8 white males and 2 females and no women of color? You know what? We can look at the behaviors and the outcomes. And so that's what the focus should be on. What is its impact on others?
Absolutely. What is its impact on others? And how does that, you know, play out and impact
how
they live their lives? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about, the impact of bias and discrimination. And also something I'm really fascinated about is what is the evolutionary function of all of this?
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah, that'll be good. Yeah. So you're listening to The Brilliance Ultimatum. I'm Claudette Rowley. And when we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll dive right back in. Stay tuned.
You know that moment when you realize you've mastered your wellness or that you will never fall off the roller coaster of life? Well, yeah, me either. But I still ride unicorn. I will teach you how to become a mindset master. You will learn how your habits and behavior affect the success of your nutrition and exercise, relationships, organization, and so much more. Motivation doesn't arrive in an email, so stop waiting for it. You have to take action, then motivation follows. I am Coach Peggy Wells. Get out of your comfort zone and recognize the simple truth. We aren't that special. We all have crap to deal with, and we all have a lot more in common than not. I want to spark you into action. We will learn, love, and laugh together. So join me every first and third Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific for Coach Couch and Coffee Radio, where you will learn that being happy and healthy is way more than carrot sticks and squats. I'll talk to you later.
We're back on the Brilliance Ultimatum. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, my guest today is Audrey Nelson. And she and I are talking about managing unconscious bias. So, you know, Audrey, right before we went to the break, right, we're talking about some of the research, right, on the ways we know people are discriminated against based on who they are and some of the impact, right?
Right.
In nations and in people's lives. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very important, you know, and sometimes we do and say things before we've had a chance to stop ourselves, which is unfortunate. I think it's fascinating to look at the whole DNA, how we're hardwired, how actually, in many ways, our stimulus response, our flight responses, all these things are hardwired as a survival function. Now, that, of course, is something that is positive and that we can all relate to. But unfortunately, because, let's circle back, because of maybe the way you were raised, biases that you incurred from your family, your peer group, your personal experiences. I read a great case study today about a Japanese man who is a CEO, and he was in the internment camps during the war. Mm-hmm. And he gives this great example. He said for them, being children, it didn't impact him. But later, it really came back to haunt him a little bit. And he was sharing an example of how his family was very excited. They were very excited about going to Sears and getting a family portrait done. And what had happened when they had the portrait done, the photography was set up for white skins, for white people. And they had gone down, it was Sears, with an Indian family in the neighborhood, and both of them, when they got the pictures back, because, you know, the bias was just, these are photographs for white people, mm-hmm. white families. And it came back with their teeth extraordinarily white, their facial features barely showing up. So there is a built-in bias just in a photograph without people even thinking, you know, what the ramifications could be. I want to use myself as an example because I have two great illustrations. When my daughter was interning at Berkeley High, she's teaching Algebra 2, tough subject, and not always everybody's favorite class. Mm-hmm. And the way they teach it is you sit in groups of four. Well, I was sitting in the back. She wanted me to observe her teaching. They were two girls, young girls, these are like 16-year-olds, that were of Asian descent. And the third member of their group, they must have had somebody absent that day because they sit in groups of four. And the idea is you help each other. Well, the third member was a white football player. And not that he was a football player, really plays into this, but he was walking around the class, visiting with everybody and serving as a big distraction, talking about the upcoming game. And when my daughter, you know, tried to encourage him to sit back in his seat, you know, I just chimed in a little from the background. I said, look, you've got the best group here. These are the smartest girls. They're going to get all the answers right. And I had to think later, did I say that because of what? What's a popular bias? Mm-hmm. They're even looking at this at Harvard right now. Is that, you know, people, why are all scientists and tech people, why are they all Asian? So I had to ask myself, you know, these are the kinds of questions people ask. Was I demonstrating unconscious bias?
That's a great example.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know what the two 16-year-old girls said to me? It was great. They go, hey, did you say that because we're Asian?
Wow.
And they called, oh, yeah, they called me out on it. And I thought, God, did I just do that? I don't, you know, to this day, there's no litmus test or, you know, I can't definitively question it. But I think there's a chance that that's true. So
what did you say to the two girls?
Oh, I didn't have any response. I was, quite frankly, doesn't happen to me often. I was dumbfounded. You know, I said, God, why did I say that?
Yeah.
Did I say it because they were two Asian women and Asians are supposed to be good at math and science? So see how there's all kinds of biases. They're not all unfavorable.
Right.
So I think that is also the other, you know, talking point that should hit home with everybody. The second example.
Right. Also.
Pardon me?
Bias can actually be favorable, too.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, right. Absolutely. Yes, you hear it all the time. Mm-hmm. And anytime we have favorable biases, it also means we have unfavorable biases. So that's something to consider, you know, when we look at all of this. I have a second example that has always been entertaining to me. And this happened a couple of decades ago. My husband was a pilot, always told me, anytime you see a woman in the cockpit, she's better than any man sitting in there because she had to work harder, be smarter, and be top on her game. So he embedded that in me. He said, female pilots are the best. And so I get on an aircraft, as I do often, in my travels for work, and I have a habit of looking to the left as you approach and board the plane and peek into the cockpit. I see the pilot, the co-pilot, and the flight engineer, and they're all three women. My first reaction when I look, and my specialty is in gender and has been for 40 years. So if someone like myself with this heightened awareness can have this kind of reaction, I walk in, look to the left, all female cockpit. I went, ah! That was my first reaction.
Interesting.
So I caught myself. I go, wait a minute. What's wrong with that? First of all, I've never seen an all female cockpit. And there rarely is. I mean, we make a big deal. NASA right now is going to have two women, you know, managing and doing work on the space station outside a shuttle and everybody's, it's the big news. But I caught myself. I said, what am I doing? And here I am. All three of my books deal with gender. How in the world did I have that kind of trigger response? So many of these things, and I like to hold myself up as an example, because I think it's important to realize that conditioning to turn on your television set. I mean, look at social media. We're just bombarded with messages that all, many have bias in them. So we have to be a little careful, though, because what you're sometimes seeing, you actually, this has even been in courts of law, you know, where situations where people are blaming unconscious bias rather than a conscious choice. And it serves as an excuse for people. This is why I didn't treat you fairly. So they don't have to be held accountable for their behavior. And I think it's an important consideration when we look at this.
Yeah, it is a really important consideration because we all, you know, we're always still going to be held responsible for our actions and choices, right?
Right. But people try to get out any way they can.
Yeah.
There's, you know, an example of how some people have tried to use this. The problem is too often we do what our biases urge us to do. And the reason for that is, you know, maybe a decades long society wide encouragement to go with our gut instincts. And even to believe that instinct is better than thinking. And yes, the gut instincts, you know, we know from our studies and research in nonverbal that we pick up, we receive subtle cues and some not so subtle, but we're bombarded by many cues in our environment. And that gives us a gut feeling for things. So, for example, I'm interacting with someone and they're not maintaining kind of regular eye contact, which is, you know, about 60-40. You look about 60% of the time, the other 40%, you do what we call gazing. Well, then, you know, I begin to formulate this bias, you know, my gut. I go, are they deceiving me? Why aren't they looking at me? I don't feel very warm toward them. They don't seem approachable to me. I begin to bet. Now, all of this can happen in a nanosecond. Again, you know, this is odd, or I don't like this. It's uncomfortable. So we just need to be aware of what cues we're acting on.
And what, when we think about the evolutionary function of unconscious bias, can you tell us more about that? Because I think that's so important here.
Sure. I mean, you know, here's a basic that everybody can relate to, you know, like fight or flight. We get a message. We may hear a noise. We may see something that looks out of the ordinary. And we're just, it's hardwired in our DNA, our circuitry, that this could be potentially a frightening, potentially hazardous situation. And it's interesting, you know, like with approach avoidance, most people will rather flee than fight. And I have to say, it's very similar with many animals. So it served us in the Neanderthal days, right, when we had to make split-second decisions. But that circuitry is still alive and well And so sometimes we jump when we don't need to, or we, you know, back up real quick, or we, those are great examples of how that hardwiring serves us well. But the reality is that this evolution then gets massaged, formed, and impacted by external cues, society, stereotypes, the cultural context we're in, you know, what messages did our parents give us, all of that. So the reality is that our biases affect us and our decision-making process. They impact our perception, our attitude toward things, our behaviors, our attention, our listening skills, our micro-affirmations, maybe even our micro-aggressions. So it's very important, as anybody with a high emotional intelligence, you're self-monitoring and you're scrutinizing your behavior.
So how do we gain more awareness about our own biases? You mentioned, you know, scrutinizing your own behavior and being aware, but let's say someone hasn't really had practice doing that. Like, this just hasn't been part of their life, and they want to get better gaining awareness.
Well, the first thing you need to do is educate yourself about the biases, like we're doing now, and what forms they can take. Like the examples I gave of, you know, older women receiving fewer life-saving interventions. You know, if you're obese, as a child, all those examples, you won't be. So we need to be educated first. So that is the awareness level. But then you want to catch yourself in the act.
Okay.
And one of the best ways is if you have friends or colleagues that can give you feedback, a trusted individual that could say, well, this was a little questionable. You know, what did you mean by that? Take me as an example. What did you mean by saying you're in the smartest group with the two young Asian girls? You know, stopping unconscious bias, one of the best learning curves you can have is when someone calls it to your attention. That's why people listen to this kind of talk show, take my training. The important thing is when you want to stop it, it's important that you approach people in private because you don't want to cause them to lose face. And you should always focus on behaviors. Very important.
Right.
If something happens in a group and you don't want to call attention to it right then and there, it is, I think, very important to use some method right there. If the conversation is going down the wrong avenue and you want to reprogram where the group is going, take a break, pull the person aside and say, you know, you're alluding to or making assumptions about a group of people and I'm concerned about it and where we're going to go with that. So you look for that teachable moment. But constant reminders through training, hiring policies, people who are conducting recruitment. You don't send two white men to recruit female talent for top public accounting firms. That was one of my other clients. But they had no awareness. I think it's important, and this is what I conduct, take cultural snapshots of organizations. You know, what's the composition of your board of upper level management? I mean, revealing the bias is important, but anytime you change your own personal behavior, awareness, I say, is half the battle. Just knowing it's out there. Of course, I use myself as an example of someone who's been in the area of gender for 40 years, research, publish, consult, train, coach, everything. And look at the reaction when I saw the three female pilots. And I guess I want to say that you can't be real hard on yourself, but the more ownership you take, wow, I have some kind of deep-seated bias here. Where is that coming from? Why am I doing it? That kind of examination is really important.
This is reminding me of something that happened. Something I said that came from an unconscious bias, which was over the summer. And it was at a family gathering. I was talking with one of my sister-in-laws, who is married to another sister-in-law, my husband's sister. And she was saying they had been at a wedding the previous weekend. And I said something about the bride and the groom. Made an unconscious assumption that the two people getting married were a man and a woman. And she just gave me this look, and I was like, oh, I mean the two people getting married.
Right.
And completely, I didn't mean anything by it, just was a complete unconscious, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Boom. Yeah.
Exactly. It's interesting that you bring that up. I had a PhD in engineering, African-American woman, in my training session. And the example I was using, it was in the context of talking about de-escalating a conflict with difficult people. And in it, I use Stephen Hawking's black hole, the black hole out in the universe.
Right.
That is, first of all, I made the assumption that everybody was familiar with the black hole. And I've learned in my training, I may not use that example. I was trying to use it as that sometimes you can get sucked into places you don't want to be. And that is often the outcome a difficult person wants. So she pulls me aside after. And she said, why did you use the black hole? Well, a part of the physics of a black hole is it does a suck in. It has a magnetic force. And I thought that was apropos for the point I was trying to make. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll be honest with you. You know, I'm familiar and I know this because my degrees are in communication. We look at rhetoric. We look at the way people speak, what are linguistic patterns, word choices. And we know that black has always been associated with evil, mm-hmm. wrong, and white, you know, the white knight, you know, riding in on the white horse is associated with everything good and noble. And I thought to myself, and honestly, to this day, I don't know how I come out on it. Did she have a point? And even though for the life of me, when I search the deepest depths of my mind and my heart and my soul, I know my intention was to make an analogy of a place you don't want to go or be sucked into. And I don't use that example anymore.
That is such a fascinating story.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and it's complicated and it's complex because I don't know if there was a right or wrong there. But here's something that people need to remember. There's intent and impact. My intent was simply to use the black hole as an illustration for a dynamic that happens with difficult people in a conflict. But the impact of my behavior is it was offensive to somebody. Now, this is where we get into a term I abhor, which is, it's not politically correct. I abhor that term. If there's any way I can learn to be more respectful, to honor everybody around me, to treat them with the kind of courtesy that I want to be treated, I want to do it. Now, do I believe, is there a part of me that believes that this woman engineer was stretching it a little bit? Yeah, I do feel that way a little. I feel that I'm not completely convinced, but she had, I get the point. Black, white, good, bad, anytime, particularly when you get into two opposing frameworks like that, it gets difficult.
It really does. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about, how can you recover from unconscious bias? And, the power in doing that. So this is Claudette Rowley. You are listening to The Brilliance Ultimatum. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Coming to you live on TransformationTalkRadio.com is The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and what she calls reality resistance. Join the cultural revolution and annihilate obstacles. Check it out at culturalbrilliance.com.
Your inspiration all day on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, this is Claudette Rowley, and you're back on The Brilliance Ultimatum. My guest today is Audrey Nelson, and we are talking about managing unconscious bias. Audrey, before we dive back in here, if listeners want to find out more about your work and your books, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best way is to just go to my website and they can just Google Audrey Nelson. My email is audrey@audreynelson.com. If anybody has any questions, I'm on LinkedIn. My Psych Today blogs are over 1 million hits now. It's been pretty successful. I'm going on my fifth year. So those are the best ways.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and how have you, I'm curious about the Psychology Today gender blog. How have you enjoyed writing that? What's that been like?
Oh, I really like it. I'll tell you, it lets me know that bias is alive and well. So I was approached by Psych Today about 5 years ago, and it's really high now. We're almost 1.5 million hits. Gender is a very triggering topic. It really brings up a lot for all kinds of people. But one of the things that reminds me is that how alive and well sexism is and misogyny and people's opinions about what's important for women and what women can really do. So I'm here to let the public know that those you know, sexist opinions are still alive and well. But you were talking earlier about what we can do personally. I think HR professionals are at the forefront of combating unconscious bias. And one of the critical ways, for example, is in hiring. It's important that employers try to maintain policies that are supportive of equality. There was a great, and I show a video excerpt of this study that's so powerful. They take a man and a woman, and honestly, I think they were twins. Their facial features are so similar. They give them the identical script, and they have them go through an interview process, and then they ask the interviewers, men and women, and don't think bias against women is just a male thing.
Oh, no.
It's also very much a female thing, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So it was amazing. They would both say, for example, one of the things they say is, I know windows like the back of my hand. And the interviewers were saying that when the female being interviewed was being arrogant and self-selling, well, what do you do in an interview? You sell yourself. So they had favorable opinions of the male candidate who, and less favorable, the female who said the identical things. And even look, they really did a great job for not having any, you know, problem variables. They kept the room the same. They dressed at the same level. He was not in a suit. He was dressed casually. She as well. They really had good controls in that study. So it was interesting to look at that. There was another study that was just in the New York Times this yesterday. And the study was, are Emily and Greg more employable than Lakeisha and Himal? Ooh. And the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
And by a lot. So what they found is simply having a white name increased callbacks for job interviews by 50%. And when you look at these kinds of things, this is where HR has to step it up to create gender neutral environments, to attract candidates. You know, asking a female candidate if she has a family, but not the male candidate. Just, it can be so nuanced. I had this as an example from a partner in a public accounting firm. He said, we had two people coming up. We could only promote one for partner that year. And the questions that were directed at the female candidate, he said, we're going to take a break. He goes, why are we asking questions about her family life? But we did not do that with the male candidate.
Exactly.
And so what, you know, it's a discriminatory behavior. And we
That's
just
a great need, example, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. We just need to, you know, really grab a hold of what that means for all of us. I know for myself as a trainer, when I left the university, I wanted to cut my teeth on the most difficult training, which is the public seminar. And the seminar, the company that recruited me to design their women's programs, and they found me, they heard me giving a presentation. And when I looked at the company, I said to the CEO and owner, and it was one of the biggest in the US, I'm not going to mention names. And I said, wow, you know what I noticed in your faculty, you're like 80% male. And he said, that's because men get higher evaluations in their training than women do. And you know, when he said that to me, I knew it was true. And I said, so what that means is I will have to work twice as hard to get the same, you know, number of evaluations, because at the end of the day, it's what's your number. You know, what did you make in that evaluation? So he was using all this, and then it got even more interesting. He said, only women I will hire are PhDs. So he had men with four-year degrees, but the women had to have PhDs, because that leveled the playing field in the unconscious bias of perceptions of credibility. And this, I should state, is just for both men and women perceive men as more credible source than they generally do women. So
even in almost 2020, we're still dealing with this. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, providing this kind of awareness training, creating structures, you know, HR policies, promotions, compensation, have it be an integral part of the organizational culture. Take a look at your policies. Do they have bias built in? Be, you know, very aware of what line of questioning you have in interviews for hiring, promoting, same question should apply to both genders, to all races. And I got to remind everybody, the Equal Pay Act requires employers to provide their employees whose job, you know, functions require equal skill, effort, responsibility, or perform under the comparable working conditions, you know, equal salary, bonus, overtime, stock options, all of it. Life insurance, holiday and vacation pay. I mean, any organization could take a hard look at that to uncover their biases.
It's such a practical suggestion. Thank you so much. And, you know, our show has flown by. I mean, I only have a couple minutes left. What's a final thought that you'd really like to leave with listeners today?
What I wish and hope for everyone personally is that we go through a tough self-examination. And really, you really need to begin with how you were raised. I do that with myself a lot. My mother used to say a horrible thing. She was born in Belgium and was there as a teen during the Nazi occupation. She felt like she suffered, and the Belgians did, more than the Jews. And I used to say, Mother, do we need to have a contest for who suffered the most? I said, 6 million Jews perished in World War II. And there, right there, is a kind of bias that I was raised with, that I heard about. And, you know, we were raised Roman Catholic. She was Catholic. So you need that hard examination. I'm going to pay attention. What messages did I get? And then, you know, the next second message I have is, you know, silence is compliance. If you see things going on in your organization and say, why are we doing it one way for one group of people, but we're not doing it the same for another group of people? Why aren't we consistent in our policies? And, you know, why aren't things more equitable in representation? So
thank you so much. I mean, two great things for us all to take away: self-examination and that silence is compliance. Audrey, thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing your knowledge and expertise with us.
You're really welcome. Really appreciate it. Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Absolutely. It was absolutely a pleasure. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in. We had a wonderful time as always. Please join me the second and fourth Friday of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific time. We'll be back here in a couple of weeks. And until then, have a brilliant couple of weeks.
You've been listening to the hit show, The Brilliance Ultimatum Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Tune in next time on TransformationTalkRadio.com for powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and move beyond the mindset of division. Each show, Claudette strikes right at the heart of the matter and looks past political squabbles, lack of humanity, and what she calls reality resistance. We just need the will. For more information about the Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up, visit culturalbrilliance.com and join the cultural revolution. See you next time.